This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. An affront to the rule of law. That's how a St. Louis judge described the ongoing imprisonment of Christopher Dunn yesterday. Chris Dunn has spent 34 years behind bars for a murder in St. Louis. He's maintained his innocence from the start, and that assertion is backed up by the very witnesses who originally helped convict him in 1991. Also on his side are prosecutors, including judges like St. Louis Circuit Judge Jason Sangheiser. On Monday, Sangheiser ruled that Chris Dunn was innocent and ordered his release. But just minutes before Dunn walked free, that order ran into opposition from the Missouri Attorney General, who contradicted the judge. And so, even after being found innocent again, Chris Dunn still is not free. Whether it's characterized as a legal roller coaster or an affront to the rule of law, the result is the same for Dunn, his family, and his supporters. To talk about these latest developments in Chris Dunn's case, especially the legal fight between a St. Louis judge and Missouri's Attorney General, we're joined by St. Louis Public Radio reporter Lucretia Wimbley. Lucretia, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Elaine.
So what is it that led Judge Jason Sangheiser to order that Chris Dunn be released from prison earlier this week, Lucretia?
Sure. Well, back in February, St. Louis Circuit Attorney Gabe Gore asked the court to vacate Dunn's murder conviction in the 1990 fatal shooting of 15-year-old Rico Rogers. Dunn was convicted largely on the testimony of two boys who were 12 and 14 years old at the time, but both of them recanted their stories later in saying that they were coerced by police and prosecutors. Now, earlier this week, Judge Sangheiser ruled the St. Louis prosecutor made a clear and convincing showing of innocence, which undermines the basis for Dunn's conviction. And because in light of the new evidence, no juror acting reasonably would have voted to find Dunn guilty of these crimes beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, on Wednesday, Sangheiser gave the prison warden until 6 p.m. to release Dunn or face being held in contempt. The judge said that defiance of a court order would not be tolerated.
Mm-hmm. So that's a lot happening in a very short span of time. So Chris Dunn was supposed to be released yesterday evening, and his wife, Kira Dunn, was at the prison waiting to greet him. She told producer Danny Wisentowski that Chris was literally feet from the door in his civilian clothes. What is it that stopped his crossing that threshold?
Yeah, so the Office of Missouri's Attorney General, Andrew Bailey, pretty much directly intervened to stop the release. And so essentially the Attorney General's office said that they needed further clarity on whether or not Dunn should be released while an appeal that they filed is pending. The Attorney General had filed a notice to appeal after the court judge overturned Dunn's conviction on Monday.
Mm-hmm. So, like, it's something procedural. There's no other reason as far as we know.
No, pretty much that's it.
So what is the legal argument then that Bailey is using?
He's pretty much just saying according to the Department of Corrections, when a conviction is overturned, the department has 30 days to release the incarcerated person. And this gives prosecutors the opportunity to let the department know whether or not new charges will be filed, and it gives the Attorney General's office time to let the department know whether or not the court's decision will be appealed.
Mm-hmm. So then the prison is allowed to refuse a judge's order because this came down from Attorney General Bailey? And because of that 30-day waiting period?
Technically, yes.
Okay. So you had a chance to speak with an investigator at the Midwest Innocence Project, which is representing Chris Dunn. What did they have to say about Bailey's actions?
Sure. So Dunn's legal team and his family, as you mentioned already, were fully ready to have him gain his freedom and hug on him after the circuit judge gave the prison warden a 6 p.m. deadline yesterday to release him. But his wife, Kira Dunn, and her mother-in-law, Martha Dunn, were seen hugging outside of the prison, just waiting for his release in a post-dispatch photo. So they were pretty disappointed that didn't happen. So his legal team said that the decision to keep him in custody didn't make sense, mainly because two courts at this point have found Dunn to be innocent after reviewing the evidence.
Mm-hmm. So what is it that comes next, Lucretia?
So the Supreme Court gave Judge Sangheiser until 5 p.m. Friday to respond to Bailey's motion. And Bailey has until 5 p.m. on Monday to file suggestions in reply. So it's pretty much a waiting game at this point as court proceedings continue.
Mm-hmm. Lucretia Wimley is a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Elaine.
This isn't the first time Chris Dunn has had hope snatched away by the legal system. In February this year, Dunn spoke to St. Louis on the Air producer Danny Wisentowski from the South Central Correctional Center in Licking, Missouri. This was just days after St. Louis Circuit Attorney Gabe Gore announced that his investigation showed evidence that Dunn was innocent and that he'd proceed with a legal effort to free him. Former St. Louis prosecutor Kim Gardner also filed a similar motion for Dunn's innocence just days before she resigned in May 2023. Gore took over and started the inquiry of the case with his own team. This is the second St. Louis prosecutor to support Dunn. When they spoke earlier this year, Danny began by asking Chris to describe what it was like to get news, once again, that a St. Louis prosecutor agreed he was wrongfully convicted.
I can remember coming in from the yard, and we had just ended programs. And I called Kira, and as I was talking to my wife about 5 minutes, she got a phone call. And the phone call, she asked me to hold on for a second. And apparently, it was a reporter who contacted her. And during that course of that, she clicked back over and started crying. And I wasn't sure why. And I asked her what's wrong. And she stated that she just got the news that they just vacated or moved to vacate the sentence. So I was kind of taken aback about it. So I asked her who moved to vacate it. And she stated that the Circuit Attorney of the City of St. Louis, Gabe Gore, he moved to vacate my conviction. And I was like, wow. It was hard for me to express myself because, to be honest with you, I've been down this road before. And I wasn't sure what to expect. And after Judge Hickel made his determination and still I sat in prison, 5 years after that, and then after Kim Gordon made her determination that I was innocent, and still I sat in prison after that, and now this new circuit attorney for the City of St. Louis made the same exact judgment, but with a little bit more from my understanding.
Let me ask you about that point you brought up. This is the third time you've gotten this kind of news. Are you feeling maybe more protective of your feelings or your expectations?
I have to be protective of my feelings because if I choose not to, then I will be denying myself. Or better yet, it's like trying to visualize hope being introduced to justice. If the two ever met, what would they say to each other if they saw me? I never saw justice before. I never seen hope. So I wouldn't know what the two looked like if they were staring at me dead in my face. And to sit in prison after hearing it for the third time, to vacate, is a relief, sure. But I still have to live in prison with the uncertainty that I may possibly die in prison because we just got over one of the largest hurdles, but we haven't reached the finish line yet.
You know, Chris, it strikes me that the experience of people who are in your position, a lot of times, you know, you're not in control of the timing of things. So much about the justice system is out of your hands. For someone who has had to deal with a justice system that takes so many tools away from you, to have what happened with Gardner and then to have that taken away for another set of just, you know, a chaotic series of events that you didn't control, what does that feel like? How do you maintain some strength after that kind of reversal?
Wow. I grew up in the inner city of St. Louis, in a Wells Goodfellow neighborhood. But I also grew up in a house, a home, with both my parents and three sisters. But I grew up with an extended family. My whole community was my family. I have seen more hurt. I have felt more hurt and seen more drama than an average child. So not to say that I was conditioned to endure. What happened to Kim Gardner was very unfortunate. And it was something, like you said, I had no control over. All I could do, sir, is at that time is focus on what I could control. And that was my emotions. I knew from all the disappointments in the past, from childhood till now, I could not rely on the system to do the right thing at that moment, especially when so much was going on. Every day that I wake up above this ground is a day that I have to say that I'm blessed. It's another day that I have to continue to fight to get home to those that I love and that those who have stood and fought with me. Those who still believe that I am completely innocent. I can wake up and be bitter if I wanted to, but what would it get me? What would it get me? Probably the ass egg, probably the hole. It would not get me back out in society because my better judgment would be clouded. So I have to focus on what is the greater picture now. And that's to visualize myself with my family.
I know this might be a sensitive area to ask about the witnesses who had led to your first conviction. Is there anything that you can tell us of how you feel about what they've gone through and the fact that they have recanted?
Can you imagine being 12 years old and being shot at and then turning around and have to be told by a friend to lie? Then a year later, being told or influenced to lie by the police or the victim's mother, then stating that you didn't want to testify because you wasn't sure originally, but you would continue to be coerced. That was a child, a kid. I remember what I was like when I was 12 years old. I remember the life that I had, the innocence that I lived, but also what I've endured. I learned to accept the fact that both witnesses, the 12-year-old as well as the 14-year-old who accused me of this crime, I understand that they made a mistake. They were young. We all make mistakes. Sure, it took them 15 years to come back and admit to the first mistake. Then it took an additional 10 years to locate the other witness over 2,000 miles away with the assistance of three different attorneys and four different investigators. It hurt to hear them say that I was guilty of a crime that I didn't do or that I committed a crime that I didn't do. But it kind of soothed my soul to hear them say why they lied. Because that's all I ever really wanted to know. Why would they lie on someone like me, out of anyone in the neighborhood, especially someone like me? And I understand, and I forgive them. I forgive them both because they was children. They was kids who made a mistake, but a mistake that they chose to right now. And we got to give them that. We can't hold it against them. We all have to learn to let go and move forward. The past is only going to hold us back. It's good to learn from it. But to hold on to any ill feelings or negativity towards them is only stuff. stagnating my own growth or any progress that I wish to make in life. So I forgive them.
That was Chris Dunn speaking in a February 2024 phone call from prison with our producer Danny Wisentowski.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.